Well, welcome everybody to the Resilient Leadership Podcast, where everything that we talk about is aimed at helping you to lead with a greater sense of calm, clarity, and conviction, even in anxious times. I am Bridget Tyer, and today, as always, I'm joined by my co-host, my collaborator and good friend, Irvin Nugent. Irvin, how are you doing today?
Hey, Bridget. I am doing well. Just before we hit the record button, we were talking about how miserable we are in the cold. As we record this, it's the beginning of February. And I know you in Minnesota are probably laughing at us and saying to us, you think that's cold? But for DC people and the surrounding area, these have been 10 or 12 days of bitter, bitter cold, and there's no let up. The snow's still in the ground. So as I get older, I remember people saying to us, you get older, you'll really feel it. And I said, yeah. And I know, now I believe. I'm a believer. It is hitting the bones hard, but it is good to be alive. And I'm looking forward to today's topic. It's an oldie, but it's a great one to bring up time and time again.
It is. Okay, I have to laugh. Shout out to one of my clients who listens to our podcast every time an episode drops. And one of the things he said to me recently is, you and Irvin always open up talking about the weather.
And you know what you're saying to him? It's very Irish. It's very Irish. The Irish can talk about the weather for hours, let me tell you.
Oh, well, you know, apparently so can you and I. But at any rate,
there you go.
So today's topic is one that touches everybody's life at some point, right? And that's this perennial search for work-life balance. Now, today's conversation is really about unearthing what truly gets in our way. And truth be told, I don't think it's what most people think when they complain about work-life balance. But more on that in just a minute. So, of course, this, you know, Irvin, has been a popular topic ever since we've been coaches.
Sure.
And that has been a long time.
Absolutely.
But I'm curious, just, you know, in your own experience out there doing speaking engagements and coaching people, like, what is your sense right now of the degree to which work-life balance is currently a challenge for folks?
You know, it's interesting because I think the way I'd like to describe it is the challenge remains the environment in which we have to execute it changes. So like, for example, we went through the whole COVID reality of trying to get balance with working remotely. And for some people, that is their reality. And now you've got the return to work and there's the balance of that. And I think what's interesting, or maybe a tinge of a new flavor, is a general sense of trying to create balance with overwhelm. So in other words, it just seems there is so much change. There is so much anxiety about what's around the corner. And that's feeding into a kind of a balance. How do I deal with that in a work-life sense? So that's what I'm hearing a little bit more. It's still there, but I think it's expressed a little bit differently.
Yeah, I would concur with that. I think that there's a lot of folks, in fact, some of my most recent coaching conversations in the last couple of weeks have been around the sense of overwhelm and, you know, wanting more balance, but figuring out how to do it, or maybe even resigning themselves to it not being possible in their particular situation. So it remains such an important topic. But I was, you know, I got curious about, like, what does the research tell us? What do the numbers tell us? And I just did a little bit of searching online and came across in Forbes magazine, you know, this article that was citing a 2025 study about this. And I thought the results were interesting. And so what this particular study showed is that 66% of the millennial employees that were surveyed reported experiencing burnout, but 74% of Gen Zers were experiencing at least moderate, if not heavier, levels of burnout. So that was kind of interesting to me.
Yeah.
And then the thing that stood out to me most, Irvin, actually about this was that for the first time in 20 years, work-life balance has surpassed pay as the top priority for job seekers. And I'm guessing that doesn't surprise you.
No, not at all. Not at all.
Yeah. So it's important. It remains a bit elusive. There's some different contextual challenges around it. But here's a question I got for you, Irvin. So if you were to randomly pull 100 career professionals who, you know, say they would really like more work-life balance, and you ask them, well, what do you think are the top reasons that you don't have it or can't achieve it. I'm curious, what do you think they'd say?
I would surmise that many of them would point to some external realities that are forcing their hand or their situation. So things that I have heard, and I'm sure you have as well, I have a very demanding boss. The boss is always demanding this, that, and the other, and there's no let up. Or another one, everything seems to be a priority, and I don't know, I have to do everything. Or something like, you don't understand our culture. Culture's always on. There's an expectation that you go the extra mile and you always have to do the extra. Or just the point of view, there is no escape. Like, so with technology, you know, you're in the car and even now you're on a conversation. Or economic uncertainties, you know, where are we don't know. We're in a situation now where a lot of companies are hedging bets. Is it going to be a recession? Is it not going to be a recession? And so therefore we have to put extra effort, et cetera. So that's kind of what comes to mind for me. I'm curious, what comes to mind for you?
Oh, of course, very similar themes, you know. I mean, that's what I hear from my clients, all of them, ditto to all of them. And of course, those are all realities. And they do contribute to the challenge that work-life balance is, right? There's just no doubt about that. So I think that what we want to hone in on today, Irvin, is what's the chief impediment? Mm-hmm. There's a lot of contributing factors, but what's the biggest obstacle to achieving the work-life balance we say we want? And in my own personal experience, and believe me, I've struggled over the years with work-life balance. I am not the poster child for always having perfect balance. But in my own experience, and then in, you know, my 25 years of coaching busy professionals and executives, I have come to believe that we ourselves are the chief obstacle. Mm. You know, yes, there are external factors, but at the end of the day, it's our own deeply held beliefs, unexamined assumptions, habits, practices, patterns, our ways of relating to work, to other people that, you know, really stand in our way. And I'm guessing that's not a very popular answer because as human beings, and you and I are included as human beings, right? It's easier to look outside ourselves and to find external reasons for why we're struggling. And there are often. But, you know, at the end of the day, here's the bottom line. If we want more work-life balance, in whatever way we define that, we have to get out of our own way.
Yeah.
So kind of a bold statement to say that, I think. But Irvin, what do you think?
Well, I think it does stand to reason. I think it is so much easier to worry and fret and to preoccupy ourselves with things that are beyond our control, because there's a certain sympathy for that and the sense of, you know, but the thing about that, of course, is that then you get into this downward spiral of lack of control.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've done that. I'm sure you may have, well, in trainings or something, you know, when you talk about, hey, what about the culture you want to create in the workplace? What's under your control and what's under not? And sure. And then people will say, you know, we just mentioned about pay there. People say, oh, the pay is low. Well, there's not a lot you can do about the pay. But right. You can do a lot of other things that make the place attractive. And I think it's the same principle here, is that at times we really don't spend enough time looking at what can I do? Like, what have I put in my ways an impediment? So I agree with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because the thing is I think it's easy to think, well, I want more work-life balance. I'm desperate to get it. So it can't be me that is the problem, right?
Yeah.
But in point of fact, there's lots of ways we make it so much harder for ourselves to get what we want. Okay, so let's unpack this for our listeners and share with them what are some of these specific, you know, I know, beliefs, assumptions, ways of working that make it harder for us to create better work-life balance. What do you think? What's one of them?
Yeah, well, I think one of the ones that rises to the top for me, and I've heard this from many high-performing professionals who are deeply concerned about performance, and that is, like, the only way I can get something done well is to do it ourselves. You know, boy, if I was given a dollar for every time someone said that, I would be retiring early. And I think, you know, that's an important construct that we have made there, because I think it's below the conscious awareness that has shaped how we manage our actions, how we manage our decisions. And the thing is, we take it as a given. So like everyone says, well, of course, I'm going to do better. But the thing is, do we ever challenge that? Do we ever question that in a real, you know, is it always true? Is it, and for whom? And so therefore, I think that questioning, does something always need to be done by me? Or does it have to be done to that level that I expect? And so therefore, I think the problem with this, of course, it leads us to the belief that we have to do stuff, we have to redo stuff. It leads to emotional pressure, I think. And I think what happens is we get spread out with our bandwidth. We feel we have responsibility for more and more and more. And of course, what happens is very often with this type, I find it leads people to be in the weeds a lot more. It takes people away from doing some big picture visioning, from some coaching of direct reports, et cetera. So time that could otherwise be spent in really a value add. Is that something that resonates? Have you seen?
Oh, I mean, time and time again. I think it's insidious. And I think, I don't know, it's really hard to move past it. What are your, like to our listeners, let's say somebody's tuning in right now. And, you know, if they get brutally honest with themselves, they can go, yeah, I kind of do think if I want something done really well, that I'm the best one to get it done. I kind of do, you know, how do you move past that?
It's a great question. So I think the first thing is the willingness to ask the difficult question, to really challenge, to see you're caught in an assumption and say, ooh, is that true? And then to kind of go a little deeper and ask some really powerful questions and spend a little time with them. And like one could be, you know, what work am I doing that someone else could or should be doing? Mm-hmm. And that may just take a little step back, getting on the balcony. We've used that imagery a lot.
Yeah.
Kind of zooming back and just seeing kind of your week or your month. And looking back maybe, and what did I do that I really shouldn't have done or I could have given to someone else? And then when you've kind of looked at that, then ask something, you know, what is standing in the way of me letting them? Why aren't other people doing it? And what's standing in the way perhaps of me coaching more, that some, which may require a little bit of time up front, but with the promise that it will free me. So I think that honesty and that ability to ask some deeper questions are essential.
Oh, that's really good. And when we ask those deeper questions, of course, more gets uncovered, right? And then we have to take a harder look at that and keep moving down the line.
Yeah. So I'm curious, Bridget, what else comes to mind for you in this creation of a work-life balance?
You know, the first thing that came to my mind, and this is probably because it's something I've heard recently from a few of my coaching clients, which is this belief that the problem is the job itself that they're in. That somehow the job they hold simply requires them to sacrifice themselves, their health, their energy, time with family and friends, even, you know, their sleep. Like, in other words, there's just no other way to do this job and do it well except to overwork and overextend. And the problem is that this assumption keeps us stuck in some patterns and habits that maybe we brought to the job. They weren't baked into the job. It's not like the job description said, you must work 70 hours a week. But we bring to the job maybe some longstanding patterns like overfunctioning or overcommitting, which we've talked about in previous episodes, right? So is the problem really baked into the job, or is a big part of it how we're approaching the job, right? With the way we look at it, with the particular habits and patterns that are just part of who we are. So of course, maybe the job does come with some unique challenges, but the question is, how are we handling those challenges? And might there be some other ways to approach this particular role, this particular job, that wouldn't lead to so much self-sacrificing? Now, that's hard to see until somehow you're shown something different or someone helps you unearth that assumption, right? But here, let me share with you an example. And I'm curious what you think of this, Irvin. I was coaching a leader a while ago, and I think she firmly believed that the job and the role that she had required her to continually overwork evenings, weekends, and she was exhausted and she was resentful of the job. But I think she really believed it was just the way it had to be until one day, it was very interesting. She went to this conference, met a lot of colleagues, was talking about, you know, this lack of work-life balance, how the job was consuming her and, you know, eating her alive and blah, 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 and all that kind of stuff. And the interesting thing is that one of the people that she spoke with had almost the identical job as her, but in a different company, you know, similar culture, similar challenges and so forth. But this person, this colleague, this, you know, peer of hers had not allowed the job to overtake her life because she'd put in place these good, strong boundaries that protected her time and energy. And you know what? She was not afraid to reinforce them. She said, I don't give to fill in the blank, whether someone likes this or not. This is the way I manage it. And that meeting with that colleague was a turning point for my client. She came back and she said, you know what? Maybe it isn't just the job. Maybe part of this is me.
Yeah.
And that was an insight she had that I could not bring her to. She had to come to it herself.
Yeah.
What stands out to you?
I think that is so true. I'm thinking, I've told this story, I know, in other episodes. And I think where it fits in, and this is the situation where I had a client who the culture, at least his interpretation of the culture, is you could not leave work before 7 o'clock. And he had a son's soccer game and he desperately wanted to go to it. And so he decided to get up and go. And he thought like, oh my God, I'm going to be fired. And yet what he got was people thanking him for challenging. And it was this unwritten rule that people can't do that. And where does that come from? Did anyone say that? Is there a policy? No, it's just what's expected. So it is, I think we get sucked up into our interpretation of a culture without really challenging it. I think that's really important. Is it really the job? Who told you that? Where is it written? And what have you pushed back against it? It would be really interesting.
Yeah, that's a really good example. And until we try it, until we change or shift our approach to the job, we actually don't know, do we?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, so these are a couple of really good ones. What else, Irvin?
You know, there's one that I really think is very important, and that is, have we defined what work-life balance is? Because I've challenged some people. I've asked people, you know, and the people say, well, I really need some work-life balance. And I say, well, what do you mean by that? And it's funny, they struggle to actually name it.
Yeah.
And so the thing about it is, have you thought about what is work-life balance for me? When I say that, what do I mean? Mm-hmm. And the important reality of that is a shifting reality. I think if you are, depending on your circumstance, so if you are in your 30s or your 40s and you're dealing with younger children and they have responsibilities, work-life balance there may feel very different to someone in their 50s or 60s. Mm-hmm. You know, so, and maybe that shifts, work-life balance shifts. So maybe if you're younger, maybe getting, as I just used in this example, getting some time off for sports games or being able to once in a while travel with something that your children are doing. Or it may be my weekends are sacrosanct and I need them. So really defining what work-life balance is. And so sometimes some people need a predictable pattern. I need to know that every weekend I'm free. But for other people, you know, I've no problem working weekends one or two times a month. That really doesn't bother me. I just need to know that I can get this. So really defining it, I think, is really, really important, because we can blame our company, we can blame bosses, et cetera. But if we've been able to really sit down and say, this is what I need for this period, it's a very interesting conversation. And it shifts from this kind of, well, I just don't have work-life balance.
Yeah, that's such an important point, Irvin. You know, we throw the term around as if it has a standard definition, and it's really quite personal.
Yes.
You know, for me, I would say in earlier years, I would, my most important definition of work-life balance was flexibility.
Mm.
I've worked for myself for decades, and what made it work for me was that I could be flexible. I didn't have to be in an office by a certain time every day. And did I work incredibly hard? Yes. Did I work weekends sometimes? Yes. Did I bust my butt a lot of times? I did indeed. But what I had always was a measure of flexibility and freedom that I prized, because it allowed me to do things with family that I otherwise would not have been able to so easily. So that was then. But guess what? Now I think I have a different definition of work-life balance, which is it has to do more with like having a greater sense of spaciousness in my days, that I'm not getting up, hitting the ground running and going from one meeting to next, one Zoom call to the next, one trip to the next, but rather there's more presence in my day, right? There's more space in my day. And that feels like the right kind of balance for me now. So to your point, it's not a steady target. It shifts. It moves.
Yeah.
Yeah. What about you? What have you noticed with yourself?
Yeah, I think I'm a little opposite of you. Well, a little blend. I think at this stage of my life, I really appreciate flexibility. My work habit is that I can get into a zone and really churn stuff out. And there's stuff like, even sometimes downtime, like in the evenings, I'm finding myself doing work, which is easy work. And it's just there. And it's, and you know, and so if you ask me how many hours of work did you do? Well, I did 14. I said, that's ridiculous. No, but it didn't feel like that.
Yeah.
And then that enables me to, if I want to go for 2 or 3 hours the following day, I can do that. So that flexibility, and at this stage of my life now, kind of as I'm looking at different priorities, I think that works really well for me in the sense that I can have these spurts and then I have some downtimes. As an entrepreneur, it's worrying because anytime you have a downtime psychologically, you think, oh my God, why am I down? But I've come to love that as, you know, this is okay. This is a chance. And I think that I love that for me because it's a way of living that perhaps a regular 9-to-5 would not give me.
I get that. Yeah. And you know, again, so much of it is about what feels right to us, what works for us at a particular point in time. 14 hours a day for somebody else, like you said, might seem like, how could that be balanced? But it felt right to you.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Anything else that might get in the way when it comes to creating work-life balance?
Yeah. Okay. So I don't know about you, but I have one more I do want to share. And then, you know, I'll be curious if you've got anything else. But this one's a tough one. And I think, because I don't think if it's true of us, we don't necessarily know it to be true of ourselves. And it's this, that when push comes to shove at the end of the day, how others view us and what they think of us is ultimately more important than having better work-life balance. In other words, we say we want better work-life balance, and perhaps we do, but not at the cost or at the risk of displeasing others or being judged as lacking, you know, by others, right? I mean, to use your example about your client who didn't want to leave the office until 7, right? So maybe we realize, boy, if I'm going to have the kind of balance that I want and how I define it, which is to get to my kids' sports games, I need to leave earlier. But I look around and I see that nobody else is leaving earlier. And I want to be thought of as a hard worker, a team player. I don't want to be seen as a slacker. So if I leave, that's how they're going to judge me. So we don't do it because at the end of the day, that's actually more important to us than getting more sleep or spending time with family, right? And that's kind of hard to admit. Maybe we keep taking on work even when we're overwhelmed because to admit to anybody, our boss or anybody, that we are at capacity, you know, that we are finite in our capacity and not able to endlessly work longer and harder hours, we feel they would judge us as lacking.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, in these examples, the problem isn't a lack of work-life balance that we can't achieve. It's that we haven't prioritized work-life balance over what others think of us. And by the way, nobody says you have to.
Yep.
It's just that if you're saying that's what you really want, then maybe you have to put that ahead of that. I don't know. That's a hard one. What do you think, Irvin?
Yeah, it is a very hard one because I think it requires a little bit of brutal honesty. And in fact, if I can piggyback on that, if there was one last thing, and you just mentioned the words there that I want to bring up, and I would say it is capacity management.
Yeah.
And it's that honesty. I think there's a couple of things there. One is, you know, we do get into this, as you said, this game of feeling we have endless capacity and it's finite. And it really isn't finite. Mm-hmm. And so I think to to really understand that there is only so many yeses I can give.
Yeah.
And really perform well. And so therefore that means, like, what am I saying yes to? And is that a thought out and deliberate yes? It's funny. I just did a keynote this weekend, and the opening question I said in the keynote was a story I tell, but the opening question was, how many people here have said yes to something only to regret that yes a few minutes later? And this is it. We rush into a yes.
Yep.
And I think so that's important. And then the other, of course, the opposite side of that is, are we willing to say no?
Yes.
And I think that's, you know, very often at the very beginning of this episode, one of the things people always say is, well, everything's a priority. And that's a problem. Mm-hmm. And I think this ability to really prioritize what we should do, and then prioritize what we should delegate to and what we should defer to, all of those are really important. And I think, you know, that's not just an important lesson for work. I think it's an important lesson for life.
Yeah.
Like, what are we saying yes to? And is it deliberate? And can we say no?
Mm-hmm.
And then the second thing that reminds me is, of course, you in your book with Heather had this great chapter on managing capacity. Anything there that any nuggets for us to chew on that came out in that chapter?
You know, you've really mentioned them, Irvin. And that's the book, Missing Conversations, for our listeners, in case you don't know. But, you know, and there's some good examples in there, people struggling to manage capacity because we aren't taught this skill. That's the bottom line. Nobody sits down and teaches you how to manage capacity or the capacity of your team. But as you were talking, you know what came to my mind is a client that I coached for several years, but many years ago, when he first took over a role as CEO of an association. He was so successful and he was so good at his role. Man, he was so easy to coach because he was a natural leader and he loved the job. You know, sadly, in the last couple of years, his wife got a very serious life-threatening diagnosis. He brought so much optimism to it. He's just one of these guys that can handle things so, so well. She had a relapse. And so he decided, after, you know, reflection and so forth, to step down. And there was an article written about him. And the last thing he said in the article is that what he had to learn early on is that sometimes you have to say no to something you love in order to say yes to something that's more important. Which is what he was doing. You know, stepping down. He loved this organization. He loved that role, but he loved his family more and they needed him.
Yeah.
So, you know, at the end of the day, saying yes and no is not easy because sometimes we do have to say no to wonderful things and yes to wonderful things.
Yeah. Love that.
So, you know, this has been a great conversation, Irvin. And, you know, like we said at the beginning, it's a tale as old as time, shall we say, this search for work-life balance. But I hope that maybe what our listeners have gotten out of this is that, number one, if you kind of struggle with this, that, you know, you're in great company, you're not alone. And that perhaps if you're willing to be really curious, get on the balcony a bit, reflect a little bit more deeply, that maybe you will uncover some ways that you get in your own way of creating the balance that you so desire. And once you can see that and be, as you said, brutally honest with yourself, now there's choice. Now there's options.
Love that.
So then you can take a few little baby steps in that direction. So Irvin, thank you as always for the great conversation.
Absolutely. Loved it. Gives me lots of food for thought.
As always. All right. Take care, everybody.
Bye, everyone.